Hi, this is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon, and my guest today is an old pal of the blog. Not that she's old, but she's been a pal of the blog for a long time, Clara Klein, the lead sommelier at Sunday Vinyl in Denver, which is part of the Frasca Hospitality Group, the legendary Bobby Frasca. And Clara, thank you so much for agreeing to do this again.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. So I wanted to talk today as we come out of the pandemic and knocking on wood, it does seem like we sort of are, what it looks like for the restaurant wine business from your position in Denver. And maybe you talk about that a little bit, and then we can go on to, of course, some of my other favorite things, which are supply chain problems and the beginning of rosé season. So how's the restaurant wine business looking?
Yeah, restaurant wine business is good. I think that there was a lot of challenges that we incurred during the pandemic, and some of those, of course, are still going, much like the supply chain issues that you talked about briefly. But I think that one of the best things that's come out of it is we have had an amazing staff that stuck with us, which is pretty cool. And we also have brought on a couple of new people who are really dedicated and passionate about wine. I think that if you made it through the pandemic working in restaurants and you still want to work in restaurants after the pandemic, it's really a clear choice that it's something that you love to do. And I think a big plus about it too is now restaurants are running more like businesses, and there's more employee benefits now that are expected. And I think that that really works in our favor for retaining employees and keeping people happy. Things like healthcare and 401k and paid time off, things that were maybe like mythical creatures before pandemic. But now, as a part of the restaurant world, it really being a more, shall we say, like integrated part of the workforce now instead of its own little island. It's great that it's a comprehensive package now for a lot of employees.
I've been writing about restaurants for a very long time, Clara, and for you to say healthcare and restaurants in the same sentence is almost unheard of. So very, very glad. Very glad to hear that. So what are people looking for? How much money are they looking to spend from your perspective in Denver?
Yeah, well, it's a really quite a spectrum, as it always is. What's really great about Sunday Vinyl is that it actually has pretty much the widest spectrum out of any of the Frasca restaurant group in terms of how much money and kind of the spread on the list. So you can come in and get a bottle for $35, or you could come in and get a bottle of DRC. It really doesn't matter. Everyone's welcome. But I think a couple of lessons that we learned during pandemic is having that really widespread. Now we offer a lot more wines by the glass, thanks to we use a Corvin sparkling system. And that was influential in us being able to now pour 5 or 6 sparklings by the glass for a tiny restaurant, which is pretty awesome. And also too, we launched this thing called Dream Flight, which I'm particularly excited about. It's almost like crowdsourcing for expensive bottles, where I open 3 bottles kind of in our reserve. So like older Marquis de Anderville or, you know, some of the greatest, like I opened some Rouleau the other day, stuff like that. And I throw it on a flight together. So it's 3 half glasses and it's anywhere between $100 and $125. And it's a great way for a lot of anybody really to come in and try these wines that if you're not a billionaire, you'd probably never get to try.
No, that's really interesting. I'm not being sarcastic when I say this, but that's a reason for those kinds of wines. That's a reasonable restaurant price. I mean, you can buy a really crappy bottle of wine at some restaurants for $125.
Yeah, totally. You know, and I think that, you know, it's so funny that you brought up Bob because Bobby will be like, back in my day, we were like pouring Rouleau by the glass or whatever. And I think that, you know, my generation hasn't had the same exposure to these great classics as previous generations, just due to really the dramatic inflation in Burgundy and the way that wines have increased in value over the last several decades. It's been a humongous change. And I know that when I was, you know, really working on bringing in new sommeliers into the fold within the restaurants and talking with other fellow sommeliers, you know, it wasn't shocking to me that we haven't tasted Roumier. We haven't tasted all of these amazing things. And I thought, what better way to be able to taste than to crowd share a couple of these amazing bottles. So we see a lot of young couples. We see a lot of old couples. We see everybody come in and kind of share a flight or do two flights, whatever they want. But it's a really exciting way to be able to taste the grapes in a way that is digestible for the pocketbook.
No, it's interesting. You talk about the increase in prices in Bordeaux and Burgundy and some of the fine Italians, because you can always tell. I came in just at the end of when people could actually afford to buy those wines when I started doing this. But the people I knew who had started, I mean, there are stories of you'd be able to go to a liquor store in the 80s, and in the back, there'd be a first growth marked down to $7 so they could get rid of it. And it's, you know, just mind-boggling to those of us who look at these wines and see where it's on sale for $300 at a retailer.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. If you can find it, that's the other part too.
Find it. Exactly. So let's talk about supply chain stuff, since that's our new favorite thing to talk about. How difficult is it to get stuff? Is it getting a little better?
Well, it ebbs and flows for sure. Like getting champagne this past holiday season was very tough. I think that Burgundy in particular over the next couple of years is going to get increasingly tougher, especially with the 2021 vintage being as tiny and as decimated as it was. So I think it's really about looking forward. We're really lucky in which we have the resources and the kindness of our owners to think ahead and be able to accept all of our allocations now that we unfortunately weren't able to take during COVID. But yeah, I think it's really about seeing down the pipeline and looking forward to the next couple of months and buying ahead of time. Like it's certainly, it's not the case anymore. If you don't buy it right now, it's still going to be around. Most of the times, if you don't buy it right now, it will not be around. So it's really about thinking, okay, what do I want this list to look like 3 months from now at the end of the summer? What kind of stockpiles of wine do I need to have in order to have a fully functioning and fleshed out list by the end? Yeah, it's really thinking ahead.
Now, I've seen some stuff that says that some restaurants are trying to, I don't remember what the jargon was, practicalize their list or whatever, rationalize their list, which is, of course, make it smaller and raise the prices. What's your approach been to that?
Yeah, it's certainly not that approach. our list has almost grown by 1.5 times since we opened, which was in December of 2019. So essentially, we were babies right before the pandemic even kicked off. But I have to say that our spread is definitely much larger than it was when we first opened. What I love about it too is our under 100 zone is flush. You can find so many, it's literally pages and pages of wine under $100 that are delicious. And I think that it's important to not dumb it down. We're having so much fun. People are buying wine now more than ever. But it's really about finding the right wine for the right person and making people feel totally comfortable.
Good. So now my ultimate, well, next to big wine, white wines from Gascony, my all-time favorite subject is rosé. And what do we see coming up with rosé season as it starts to really get underway? Are we going to have supply issues? Are there some countries maybe people can find rosé from that they should be looking at if they can't find what they're normally looking for? And how do you see prices?
Yeah, so prices are kind of the same as they were last year, maybe just a little notch higher, nothing out of the ordinary. I think it won't be as delayed as last year was. Last year was extremely delayed in terms of rosé. This is kind of more of a slow trickle. We were lucky enough to get in some 2021 rosé just starting now and starting to kick off. But domestically, you can find great rosé from 2021. I also think that consumers are not as intense about finding the freshest rosé. I think last year really changed that perspective, especially if it's made by someone who knows what they're doing. And depending on the style, having a rosé that's a year old, no problem. Like, for instance, Chateau Simon, that rosé could be 10 years and would be absolutely delicious. So, yeah.
No, that's something I've noticed over the last several years, because again, 10 years ago, you bought the current vintage, you were maybe sort of okay with the previous vintage, and you didn't want to buy anything in rosé older than the previous vintage. And now, because rosé is finally popular, as almost as popular as it deserves to be, you're seeing better winemakers putting more time and effort into it.
Yeah, and it's great, you know, especially in this little springtime when we haven't really gotten a lot of European rosés in yet, a lot of the rosés from the south of France, it's a great time to explore other regions as well. Like California actually really makes some great rosé if you know where to look. Like, for instance, Lorenza is a great project out of Lodi. It's actually a mother and daughter duo focusing on older vines, which is very Provençal in style, but has a little bit more flesh to it. Outrageously delicious and not expensive. Also, another great one that I just did a little wine dinner with is Amavive. She's based in Santa Barbara, and she actually took over the Ibarra Young Vineyard that Cupé, Bob Lindquist, was farming for the longest time. So she's making some really cool stuff, just tiny amounts of it, but all like it's fantastic deal for what it is. Yeah.
So typically when we look for rosé in the U.S., we're looking for France first, maybe Spain, maybe California. Certainly not Australia, certainly not South Africa, certainly not South America. Is that maybe where people need to start looking if they want to look for value and some stuff that they may not be familiar with?
Yeah, I mean, there's some really exciting stuff out there, like Sicilian rosé is some of my favorite because of the structure that it has. Actually, there's a plethora of great Italian rosés like Tiberio. She makes outrageous rosé. It's a very different style, but the Cersuolo is delicious. Also, to Spain, Canary Islands is making some super cool rosé. Like Los Bermejos makes one of my favorite. You know, and I think that a lot of times when people are looking at rosé, they're looking at color all of the time. Mm-hmm. It's like they like a lighter style of rosé. They like a deeper, darker style of rosé. But I'd highly encourage people to try all the entire spectrum of rosé, because sometimes the color is extremely deceiving to how refreshing it is or how salty it is. And as long as you give it a good chill, it really just matters what you're pairing it with. But yeah, I think that there's some, yeah, coastal rosé, anything that's close to a coast or sees some ocean tends to be outrageously delicious. Also, Greece makes some delicious rosé as well.
Now, I will, as much as I respect you and admire you, I have to stop you here. We have almost no talk of Greek wine on the blog, and I'll tell you why. Because you can't buy it.
Well, yeah. We just got some great Greek importers into Denver. So we're very lucky.
When the rest of the country gets great Greek importers, then we'll have Greek wine on the blog.
Yes, and it's great value too. You can find some crazy great deals, but no, we're very lucky. But this is only a recent development. Yeah, San Francisco has some incredible Greek producers that come through too. But
no, I get all the time. I get emails. I get, you know, media stuff going, oh yeah, but beautiful Greek wine, and then I'll ask what the distribution is. Oh, New York City.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, if you can find some, you know, like great Greek island rosé. Oh, so good. It's so good. It's so refreshing.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and we'll make mention of it. I won't edit it out.
Okay.
Just off chance that somebody's lucky enough. And everybody listen to this, do not fuss at Clara for recommending a wine that's hard to find. So there we go. So what else, as we go through the summer, what regions do you think are going to be interesting, particularly now that it looks like a lot of the traditional parts of France and Italy and California are now going to be unaffordable for most of us.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's always value. You just got to look. I am such a big fan of a lot of Spanish wines right now, and I think that this is going to be their heyday. Like, for instance, wines coming from Valencia that maybe see like a little bit of skin contact or no skin contact. Those more like saline driven, really oceanic styles are so great with seafood, with grilled items, like come on, like a little shrimp skewer and some great Garnacha Blanc is like outrageously delicious. Also wines coming from the Canary Islands, don't discount the islands, man. They're doing some incredible work and it's hard work too, but the wines are still totally manageable. And don't forget about California. California is always making some great stuff. Like if you look at like Tablas Creek, their Grenache Blanc is outrageously cheap, you know, or looking for something less traditional, like Auban Clément makes a great Aligoté, you know, or things like this, maybe grapes that are a little off the beaten path, but made by great producers. I'm always willing to risk a couple of dollars on for sure.
No, it's Tablas, the guy at Tablas Creek does it, another friend of the blog, and he does just a tremendous job. I really am impressed with the consistency of their wines. And in fact, as long as you brought that up, let me ask you the question, the great question coursing through the wine business these days, are we going to see the end of the glass bottle anytime soon? Because of course, Tablas Creek did their experiment with the rosé in a box.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that it is important to mention that with CO2, like making glass and thicker glass bottles is like one of the greatest defenders of producing a large amount of CO2 that is responsible or coming from the wine industry. You know, like you think about that, that whole thing that like the thicker the bottle, the bigger the bottle, the more expensive, you know, and kind of the same idea with the cork as well. It's this whole kind of like legacy approach. You know, I'm so open. However it comes, if the wine's delicious, I will hold back no judgments for sure. Now personally, I think there is something kind of romantic about having a glass bottle. I think it's probably the way that we're growing up and everything that we're used to. But I totally think for something that you're just going to patio pound or chug a lug, like, I'm for it. I have boxed wine in my house. I don't care. Like, it's great to have around. I just think however you're drinking wine, as long as you're drinking wine, good for you.
That is the perfect sentiment for the blog and for all of the travails facing the wine business over the last couple of years. Thank you for saying that. And thank you again for pointing out that it's up to the producers. Consumers are willing to buy wine. It's not in a glass bottle. You just got to trust us.
Yeah. And I mean, I am totally for the can movement coming from Colorado. We're always hiking. We're always by the pool doing, you know, having fun. So it's actually great to have other methods in which you can enjoy wine. Yeah, I think it's great. The more variety, the better.
There you go. Well, thank you again, Clara. It is always a pleasure to have you do a podcast with us on the blog. I appreciate it very, very much.
You're very welcome. Of course.
This is Jeff Siegel, a wine curmudgeon. Thanks again to Clara Klein of Sunday Vinyl in Denver. I didn't miss put it in the wrong place this time. Thanks again, Clara. Thanks again for listening. So long until next time.